For most people, Peter Rabbit is all you need to know about Beatrix Potter. But there's so much more. Yes, Beatrix Potter created some of the best-loved children's books of all time. Peter Rabbit and Benjamin Bunny, Jemima Puddle Duck, Squirrel Nutkin, and the tale of those two bad mice, Tom Thumb and Hunca Munca. The recent movie version of Beatrix Potter's life starring Renee Zellweger gave us a portrait of the author as a spinster who finds success and love when she least expects it. But did you know that Beatrix Potter herself wanted to be a scientist? And that she was one of the first conservationists? That without her there would be no National Lake District Park in England? Biographer Linda Lear tells me she stumbled on these facts almost by accident.
I discovered, coming out of a museum, science museum, where I'd lectured, these incredibly beautiful fungi drawings. There was no name on the museum case, and I had no idea who they were by. And after poking around a bit, I discovered, quite by serendipity, that they were Beatrix Potter's fungi watercolors, and that she had done some, almost 400 of them. My interest was piqued. I had no idea Beatrix Potter wanted to be a scientist, but she could have also been an archaeologist. She was just interested in the natural sciences.
Was this a time when it was absolutely impossible for her to pursue that, or was it something that she didn't really even consider?
Excellent question. The late 1800s was a time when the sciences in general, but the biological sciences in particular, were professionalizing. And so they were squeezing out, quite deliberately, amateur scientists, and particularly a woman, an amateur woman, was simply not to be tolerated.
Well, you talk about her fungi illustrations and how appealing they are. It seems to me the same kind of thing can be said about her animal illustrations.
I think Beatrix is a genius on two counts. She has a remarkable imagination, and she has remarkable powers of observation. She was raised as practically an only child. Her brother was 6 years younger. They had lots of time on their hands in London. She was educated by governesses. And so being in the country in the summers was the time when she had freedom to explore. And she would bring animals home to London, and they were tolerated.
What kind of animals?
Everything. Birds, snakes, amphibians, particularly mice. She was very fond of mice. And, of course, particularly rabbits. But they brought home everything. She had a family of frogs. She had a family of snails. Her brother had a bat. And they would live with them. They would observe them. And she would draw them. And when they died, they would be carefully preserved, and then sometimes they would be boiled down to their bone structure and their skeletons would be preserved. And
well, now this is really the fascinating thing about her, it seems to me, is that you have all of these drawings that people remember of these cute little animals.
But yes.
To go to the point of boiling the carcasses so that she could study the skeletal structure and the anatomy,
right,
bespeaks a very serious woman.
A very serious intent to know so that she could draw them better and make them look realistic. The nice dichotomy is that she loved them very much. When one of her little mice falls from the dollhouse when she's working on Hunca Munca, Hunca Munca falls and injures herself, and she dies in Beatrix's hand. Beatrix is desolate, Mrs. Hunca Munca's death. But nevertheless, when the mouse is dead or if an animal got sick, she would chloroform it. She wouldn't let it suffer. And then she would study it scientifically.
How did it happen that the transition to book form came about?
Well, the wonderful thing about Beatrix is that when one door closed on her life, she was able to open another door. She was determined to find something useful to do with her life. Unlike many Victorian women of her class and wealth, she was not going to be content with sitting serving teas in staid old Victorian dining rooms. She wanted to do something useful. So when she realized that she was not going to be accepted with her theories of symbiosis and science and so forth, she decided that maybe she could sell some of her illustrations in book form. She was determined to sell the story of The Tale of Peter Rabbit and was unsuccessful. She took it to 7 publishers, was unsuccessful, and so she published it herself.
But there's also a story associated with the publication of those books. She did finally get the publisher to do them, and they became, I gather, almost an immediate success, thousands of copies.
Then, of course, there's the marketing side, which is another extraordinary side of Beatrix Potter. She was the first woman to understand what we would now call spin-offs And that in the rabbit books, especially the Flopsy Bunnies and Benjamin Bunny and Peter and Jemima Puddle Duck, that she could sell miniature statuettes of the characters, that we could have stationery and wallpaper friezes. And Frederick Warren, who was her publisher, and Frederick Warren's the younger son, Norman, who became her editor and her fiancé, did not really see the merit in merchandising the spinoffs. They were very slow and perhaps a little stodgy to see it. Now, of course, Frederick Warren and Company has rights to all of Beatrix Potter's drawings and copyrights, and it's a multi-million dollar enterprise.
Yeah. You suspect that the managers of Frederick Warren and Company have been grateful to her for the, the last century.
Yes.
There's a kind of a sadness associated with that, too. You speak of her engagement to Norman Warren, but that was a very brief affair.
It was. They were wonderfully suited for each other. And he finally proposed to her in July and died suddenly of a very malicious form of leukemia a month later.
Wow. And she wore his engagement ring.
She wore his engagement ring all her life.
But you also say she's a woman who is practical about these things. When she had to, she moved on. And though she wore his ring forever, that was not the end of her
life. That's not the end of her life. And she opened another door. She bought a farm in the Lake District and bought this little farm, wanted to be a working farmer, engaged the tenant to run the farm when she had to be back in London, and then began very slowly buying other farms, working farms. It had to be very clearly a working farm, so that in short order she became a landowner of some significance.
Now, when you say that she wanted to be a working farmer, can you explain to me what you mean? I mean, she wasn't literally out driving the oxen, was she?
She was out helping to thresh the hay and feed the cows and figure out what the sheep were going to be eating over the winter. She got very interested in a particular breed of fell sheep that are local to the Lake District area and very important for fell farmers to keep. She became interested in that, began raising those particular Herdwick sheep.
Yeah, this must have been a very difficult thing for her, because she was very successful by this time as a publisher, writer, illustrator, and that has to have demanded quite a bit of her time.
More and more, Beatrix is interested in real animals and not in imaginary animals, and so there is a conflict. And finally, of course, she decides that she doesn't want to do any more writing. In fact, people in England thought Beatrix Potter had died around the time that she was married, which was 1913. And when she died in 1943, they were surprised that she had been alive all that time. She'd really dropped out to be a Lake District farmer.
How much land did she own by the time of her death?
At the time of her death, she owned well over 4,000 acres, which doesn't sound like a lot to Americans, but in this particular delicate area of England, is a huge amount of land. And this is a tremendous gift. There would really be no Lake District National Park today, I believe, if it hadn't been for Beatrix Potter's vision.
She left all of her land to the National Trust.
She left all of her land to the National Trust. And with a great deal of money to help maintain it. I mean, she realized that you don't just turn over all this land and have somebody else, some philanthropic institution, work to maintain it. She also gave a good deal of money to continue its progress. This was a woman who adored nature, and she really got involved in preserving the land in order to preserve the landscape that she drew. And you can see it in almost every picture, even in the little books. If you look closely at the backgrounds, you'll see the Lake District.
Linda Lear is the author of Beatrix Potter, A Life in Nature.